In today's Morgan's Conversations, I'm joined by Mark Watkin, Global CEO of ASX-listed Bike Exchange. Mark goes into the history of Bike Exchange, how it was created, and his role in the last 3.5 years as Global CEO, coming from an advertising background. Mark also deep dives into the industry thematic and the sector and how biking is growing through various products as well as their geographical expansion. We join Mark now as he gives us a bit of an overview and understanding of Bike Exchange.
The business has been going for 13, 14 years now. Started in Australia by Jason White and Sam Salter, and effectively started as a classified site for bikes, and has evolved into a full marketplace, which is now in 8 countries or 4 regions. So for the first 7 years of its life was just in Australia, and then about halfway through the journey, started the expansion into Europe and the USA, and then most recently Latin America. And where the business has evolved is effectively it's bringing together buyers and sellers in a classic sort of marketplace style, single category, unashamedly all bikes. But it's making it easy for the consumer, you and I, to find what we need, anything to do with bike, and purchase that bike from a retailer or brand. So we quite often say we're enabling the industry and enabling consumers, which is two important parts of it. So been a tremendous journey over those 14 years. I joined the business around 3.5 years ago after meeting Sam and Jason as they were moving more into the sister business, as it was, Marketplacer, which is the technology that Bike Exchange sits on. Bike Exchange effectively sort of created that technology, and Sam and Jason saw that there was a requirement and a market there for other businesses to utilize that technology for marketplace needs. And that business now demerged from Bike Exchange and doing very well on its own. So they brought me in to focus on Bike Exchange as a global business. And that was 3.5 years ago. And prior to that, I was running advertising agencies, 20 years in the advertising industry, working within it, and then running businesses around the world.
And Mark, advertising to platform and marketplaces and bikes, I mean, slightly different, but also a little bit of the same. Can you talk about the reflections on your career and why you joined on this adventure and how you've been going thus far?
It's a good question. I think advertising teaches you a lot when you're running an agency. It's you're seeing lots of different categories, also running lots of different disciplines within a business. So it really, there's quite a lot of transferable skills. I also worked quite a lot in the digital space. Back in London, I worked for a digital agency for 4 years, you know, taking e-commerce sites to market. So pretty attuned with the digital space. But I suppose in parallel, I've always had a long-standing passion for sport. Been a cyclist most of my life as well, from a recreational and sport perspective. So very interested in the space, but also a very good understanding of what consumers want from that sort of background. I think that's a really key thing. We're, you know, a very customer-centric business, as well as, you know, in a classic marketplace style. You've got the business customers as well as the consumer customers. So satisfying both of those requirements is an important thing. And I think what Sam and Jason did very well, and as we've gone into each of the markets, we've always concentrated on the business side of the business first, which is, you know, getting the retailers and the brands onto the platform, not going out with, you know, big marketing campaigns first. You've got to get the product on and the retailers on onto the platform to then give a consumer experience, a sort of richer experience. And the site, to date, you know, have really grown organically from a traffic point of view. Well-optimized sites, product pages, category pages, which has helped drive really strong organic traffic to the sites around the world. Invariably, it takes sort of 4 or 5 years for those new markets to establish themselves, and I think that's where we are now. We're at a really exciting juncture for the business post the listing and the IPO, where we've got, you know, strong foundations in that European and US market to really build on. So it's an exciting time.
And Mark, Australia seems to be a bit of a hub for marketplaces, the original sort of car sales and realestate.com, and then followed on by some of the newer world marketplaces, head office here in Australia being Freelancer and Airtasker. I mean, this is very niche segment, I suppose, if you compare it to something like eBay. But obviously, marketplaces require liquidity. They require two sides of it. I mean, how have you gone about building that and getting that liquidity up so people can actually use the site fully functional and be, you know, have a good customer experience?
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. It's exciting, isn't it, really, when Australia's been, you know, first to market for a lot of those, you know, prominent brands and players in the marketplace space. And I think, you know, I think on reflection, I think Australia is a really good test market like that for establishing, and it also speaks to a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit that's in Australia. But, you know, I think from, you know, your point around, you know, how do you go about building, there's a little bit of patience there. And as I said, you know, you have to get those retailers, the brands and the products on first, because that's the thing that gets gets the traction and gets the consumers going. We've built the business really on a capital light basis, you know, which has been a lot of hard work, and through that journey as well, the technology was being created as well around being sort of fit for purpose for a marketplace. So I think that had a big part to play in the journey. And then I think then you've got to have an understanding of the category. And I think being single category, niche, as we call it, you know, trying to be something to someone as opposed to the mass marketplaces, which is everything to everyone, has certain advantages, so that we know when someone's coming to the site, they're looking for a bike. And that sounds very simple, but there's a lot you can do with that when you start to get into what we would call single customer view, and the segmentation of the audience, and the ability to then be able to be highly relevant with that consumer base, so that we might know that you've come to the site and you bought a mountain bike 6 months ago. We can now start to talk to you about relevant products, which are, you know, appropriate to your journey in the cycling world. And it's really starting to extend that customer lifetime value, which is a big part of this next phase for the business. Because on average, I think if you looked at a typical family with two adults and two children, you know, the children from the age of, you know, 3 through to 18 is probably going to go through 6 to 7 bikes as they grow. So if we can capture that, that customer lifetime value is significant. So some interesting things in that. And I think when you overlay what's happening in cycling now, what's happened in the last 12 months as people have come back into cycling through the COVID lockdowns and so forth, and then overlay what's happening with the environmental debate, the infrastructure debate, and how we live, work, and get around, it's a really exciting time for cycling over this next 10 to 20 years.
And Mark, let's touch on 2020, because it's hard not to reminisce on what was an unprecedented year generally through the entire world. I mean, the biking industry per se and the category, the size of it. I mean, you talk me through, you know, what happened at Bike Exchange internally as well, and how the business sort of continued to deliver, and again, the looking back on last year, how it's affected the industry.
It was an unbelievable year on so many fronts. And I think, you know, to acknowledge that for many people, it was much, much harder. And then, you know, that there's, you know, a lot of stories that where businesses didn't come off so well. I think our category was fortunate in that regard. And when you look at cycling as a category, the interesting thing is that where the growth is where it's being recognized as a mode of transport. I think that starts to unlock a lot of things. Where it caught the industry a little bit by surprise, because as we went into COVID, people didn't really realize what was going to happen, and no one had a crystal ball. The demand took off, and in many, many ways, manufacturing, distribution, you know, had to play catch up, and it's still playing catch up. So that demand outstripped the supply. And so what we're seeing now is a little bit of catch up. But what Bike Exchange, you know, is able to do is help consumers navigate the market to the demand, because we've got breadth of choice. We've got over 1,500 brands on the platform, over 1,500 retailers globally. So where a bike or a brand might not be available somewhere, we can help a consumer match up with a bike elsewhere or a similar bike. And equally, we're also helping, you know, the retailers and the brands navigate the market with that consumer base. So it's certainly been interesting. I would say we've seen a shift. You know, the sport and performance end of the market continues to grow, but the bigger growth areas have been in what we would call recreation, urban comfort bikes, children's bikes, and then e-bikes, which is fueling a lot of growth and bringing people into the market, because it removes quite a lot of barriers typically there for cycling. But once you start to overlay that infrastructure planning and acceleration, which is happening in many countries and cities and communities around the world, it really starts to accelerate more people coming onto bikes and using it as a mode of transport, as well as a recreation and fitness pursuit. So we saw obviously huge growth across all of our key markets. I'd say Germany's been really interesting to follow. Over 90% of the transactions that are happening on site are typically bikes being sold, transactions, and over 50% of those bikes are e-bikes. So it gives you a sense of culturally what's happening in Europe. You know, overlay, of course, that roughly around 30% of retail is happening online, which is much, much higher compared to the Australian market. And there's also, you know, an acceptance of cycling, particularly e-bikes, as a way of getting around and as a way of living. So there's a few things there where we look to Europe as where we'll likely head and end up in markets like Australia as well.
And Mark, in the 3.5 years that you've been at the role, I mean, you would have seen some change. I mean, the idea of an e-bike there is certainly something that's relatively new. And then just thinking out aloud here, you're starting to see the rise of the the delivery companies in regards to food.
That's
and
right.
Uber Eats and things that weren't around 3.5 years ago, where they're using
Correct.
Bikes and e-bikes. Have you seen some sort of tick up in that sector as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's a bit of a demystification required of e-bikes for many consumers. You know, when it's a technical sort of purchase, it takes a while sometimes for the consumer to catch up. But we've certainly started to see that unlock, and we're helping people on that journey, you know, in terms of understanding. So there's definitely what we call the urban and comfort bikes. That's the category which e-bikes firmly fits in, where an e-bike's used for commuting or that trip to the shops or whatever, as well as e-mountain bikes, which is interestingly, you're seeing people taking on challenges that they might not have normally done, you know, in the country, you know, undulating trips or journeys or, you know, recreational pursuits, which is great to see, you know, new people coming into sort of that area of cycling. And then the third would be utility, where bikes are being used as a utility, like you say, for delivery and so forth. And that side of the economy has significantly grown. It's certainly going to assist the further growth of that and further uptake of, you know, both e-bikes and utility bikes. Cargo bikes are a big opportunity which are typically used not only for transportation of children, but also of goods. And in Europe, you see them being used for people doing the weekly shop or going down to the shops and getting around and shifting goods and so forth on a bike. So where that is interesting, it avoids the need potentially to buy a second car or use a car. And again, that goes back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, that whole environmental infrastructure and convenience debate, where we start to see lots of things unlock there. And not forgetting the health benefits of using a bike. I'm originally from the UK and came to Australia in 2005, and the bike boom was really starting from a commuting point of view in London. And I've since been back a few times, obviously not in the last 18 months or so for obvious reasons, but London, and you pull up to the lights and it's a little bit like the Tour de France, you know, with so many bikes. It has really grown in the sort of 10 or so years that I'd left the city. And that's because they've had the foresight to sort of put in better infrastructure to support those bike lanes and so forth. And that's only going to get bigger and better around the world. So it's certainly an exciting time for the category and for people wanting to get on a bike for that everyday trip and convenience factor.
Mark, you mentioned the UK there. I mean, Bike Exchange has its heritage from Australia, and you've mentioned some of the geographies that you've entered into. Mm. I mean, as part of the grander plan in terms of the medium and long term, is being global and being in a number of different jurisdictions part of the plan? And again, how do you roll out the marketplace there to get liquidity early on?
Yeah, I think for where we are on the journey, we're in those four key regions, which is eight countries. Europe, for instance, we've centralized in Germany, but hub and spoke into Belgium and Netherlands. So centralized resource and then some resource on the ground in that Belgium and Netherlands region. We're very much focused on making what we've got work really, really hard. We know there's a lot of growth still to come in Europe and the USA. We're sort of high single digit from a penetration point of view, whereas, you know, in the Australian market, we're sort of about 70% of the, you know, retail market. So there's a good runway of growth in those two big regions, and not discounting Latin America as well, where, you know, we're currently in Colombia and have been at that sort of 4 year mark, 3 to 4 year mark. So we're now on the cusp of a really strong foundation there, and very recently in the last month, signed a key partnership with a business called Autoco in Latin America, based out of Colombia, who are in the automotive and electric vehicle space, you know, prominent player in that region, but they've got huge knowledge and a desire to help Bike Exchange grow. So they're going to be sort of central to that growth strategy in Latin America. We've, of course, got, you know, some other countries earmarked. I would say doing it on hub and spoke basis would probably be the first methodology of doing it. But it comes down to having good people on the ground and a good partner in some cases. So that has to be sort of the perfect mix. Certainly in the short term, making what we've got work really hard and getting that growth. And then definitely there will be some new markets that we'll look at tapping into.
And Mark, along the way, the journey that you've seen thus far in the business, I mean, how important is the technology and the innovation, the ability for people to jump on a mobile phone anywhere and to pay? Yeah. And there's different ways of paying now. And how are you looking at that in terms of optimizing your marketplace?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a key point of how people are using not only devices, but, you know, how they're paying as well. That's accelerated just in the last 12 to 18 months, again, through the effects of COVID and the acceleration across a number of areas. Yeah, you know, mobile is a key component. You know, around 50-60% coming in of traffic is coming in through mobile. I think just having a really well optimized dynamic site which is working on mobile is an important area, and we do have an app, but we're looking at the app and how we use it. It's probably fair to say it probably won't be just a straight replication of the site. It might focus on a few key areas to make that whole journey really, really strong and sticky for consumers. I think core functionality is, as we look at it, it's about taking friction out of the journey. Ultimately, buying a bike is a technical purchase. So anything we can do to assist that journey and some of those key sort of blockers that are there for consumers will be a key focus for us. Notwithstanding that the site historically and, you know, obviously e-commerce transactions have happened more and more on the platform, has always generated sales leads and inquiries into retailers and brands. So, you know, based on our sort of half year position that went out to market, we generated about $1.5 billion worth annualized of sales leads and inquiries by value. So that's a lot. And we see the opportunity to convert, you know, good percentages of that on site through, you know, mechanisms like deposit payments or full e-commerce or click and collect, because we see that the omni-channel component of our category is still important. Some people still want to touch and feel the bike before they do the final purchase and ride away. So we're sort of working with that insight firmly in mind, and most of the inquiries that we see are highly considered by consumers. So if we can get them to the point of purchase on site or commitment with a deposit payment, then that's a good thing, because then we drive foot traffic into the retailer, and then there can be a sizing and a fitting and so forth in store. There's no doubt that with technology accelerating and enhancing all the time, there'll be more tools that we can offer to help with those, you know, typical blockers and question marks that come through from consumers. So it's central to us. The platform that we're using, Marketplacer, is designed purely for being a marketplace. So that's a terrific, you know, foundation for us. I think the front end and the experience that we offer there will be a big component of focus for us as we progress through this next 12 to 18 months. And hopefully we'll unlock, you know, certain advantages and that consumer journey from a person wanting to buy a bike or other product.
Mark, one final question. You mentioned there that the 12 to 18 months, I mean, how far do you look out now in the business and positioning itself and making short-term decisions for the longer term? It seems things are much more fast-paced and volatile in the world since last year. But how do you look at the business and what excites you about the future?
Yeah, I think the good thing is because it's a replicatable model across markets. There obviously are nuances, but we can make some key strategic decisions, and 9 times out of 10, it's going to apply across markets. So that's a good thing. Of course, each of those markets is reliant on, stock as it's distributed. That's how bikes are distributed, by region. So, you know, there is a certain amount of localization there, but certainly prioritizing the things that can be applied globally is a key thing. But, you know, the key areas that we're focusing on are further subscription growth. That's the main revenue driver one of the main revenue drivers of the model, getting retailers, brands onto the platform, paying that monthly subscription. And then there's the e-commerce transaction conversion and the commissions that we take there on a transaction. So those two things, growing those are key for us, and just focusing on those, particularly EU and US, as we mentioned earlier, because of the significant sort of runway of growth there. Other, you know, tertiary revenue streams are media and some of the ancillary services. And then we've also got a sort of interesting data and insights proposition, which we're looking at. As well as then, you've got the further sort of products, services, that will enhance and complement what we've got on platform. So, you know, when you bucket it into those sort of four key areas, and in particular subscriptions and the e-commerce, it really provides a high degree of focus. And this next sort of growth area, since we finished the listing and we're now sort of deploying the capital that we raised in that process, you know, a fair bit of that's bringing some new skills into the business to help us with that growth and trajectory that we're looking at. You know, because to date, the business has done it on a pretty skinny effort. We're around 40 people globally. So it's really building out some of those core areas as well as bringing some new skills into the business.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for taking the time out today to educate the listeners on the story of and the history of Bike Exchange, obviously a long-standing business in Australia, and how the business has grown in the 3.5 years under your leadership, as well as some of the future plans in regards to the build-out of the product and the platform, and certainly the different types of products that that you offer on the platform, which is changing by the day. So thanks so much. All the best for the coming period, and congratulations on what you've achieved thus far.
Thanks, Chris, for the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon.